evening. We'll go live with our broadcast here in just a few moments. I apologize. I'll do my best to get to the mute call in the event that I cough tonight. It's been an interesting couple days dealing with a little bit of bronchial pneumonia. So all amended, all doing well. So we'll be starting here in just a couple of moments. We're going to click on the broadcast. So thank you for your patience. Take just a moment for the video broadcast to begin. Well, good evening and welcome to this celebration of life that we do every Tuesday evening. It's always great to be with you. I want to apologize, and I just did, to those who are on the phone, now for you on the video. I've got just a little bit of a cold, and I'll do my best to get to a mute button should I need to cough during the next hour as we spend our time together. This is one of my favorite experiences, and particularly this quality. And you'll notice Ramona joining us in the background if you're on the camera, and she's in her scout outfit. Hi, sweetheart. We're the Weeblos leaders in our neighborhood, the 10- and 11-year-old Boy Scouts. And one of the great experiences I had as a father was being the scoutmaster to our three sons as they were going through the scouting program, and all of them became Eagles, and we just have a tremendous love for that program, and we were asked if we would be willing to take that assignment here in our neighborhood, and we're so excited to be with the boys, and tonight was our pack meeting, and we're all here and ready to take off, and great speed getting back, sweetheart. So it's good to have Ramona here with us. It's just always great to have this powerful woman in my life, and as we take on this topic tonight of self-esteem, it's always wonderful to have a great example of someone who's grounded. Oh, Ramona said we're dealing... Was that right? Oh, my goodness. I'm really off base tonight. I mentioned to the people on the phone I was down a couple of days with bronchial pneumonia, and so I'm a little out of it. Oh, that's exciting. We did self-esteem last week, didn't we? I remember that conversation. For those of you with us, please forgive me. That's interesting. Oh, this is so exciting. Those of you who are with us for this first night, and I know we have some visitors here with us, we're going to have an opportunity to start with the very first quality, connecting with people, which is my by far favorite, because when we get into self-esteem, as we discussed, each time we get into that sixth quality, that the number one way for healing our self-esteem is mastering quality number one, connecting with people. So let's have some fun with this. And it's interesting that we are on this topic, because for the last week, I've been finishing up the chapter on the book on the art of connection. Intrinsic validation. What a great timing. This has been just a thrilling experience to get this into an understandable part of our book. An opportunity for us to make a fundamental shift. And the fundamental shift that we're going to want to consider tonight is that until this point in our life, we may have been focused on ourselves. Focused on ourselves. And Og tells us that the greatest secret of success in all ventures is love. And we know that he wrote all of these scrolls in one night. 5 o'clock in the evening until about 9 o'clock the next morning. He called it taking dictation. And when he collapsed on the bed at 9 o'clock, he said to Betty, "It's done." That which had haunted him, he wasn't sure what to put in these scrolls. All he knew is he needed to deliver the 10 time-tested principles of success. And he realized that he had just experienced that in a very revelatory way. The only scroll that Betty asked him to amend was scroll number 2. Because when he wrote it, it was very complicated for 1968. And it's important that when we look at this scroll, that we build some of that complexity back into the scroll. And the complexity is just one simple word. The word is agape. Just write that down, A-G-A-P-E, agape. We turn to the Greeks to get an idea of what Og was talking about. They had four words for love: eros, pia, philo, and agape. Eros, erotic love. philotia, maternal love, philo, brotherly love, and agape. Agape was not a feeling, it was a state of mind. It was a heightened level of awareness, a consciousness. Now, in the English, when agape is translated from Greek, it becomes the word charity. Charity. Charity endureth long. The Bible tells us that faith, hope, and charity, and the greatest of these is charity. Charity is the ability for us to step back, become aware, and see a person free of bias, free of prejudice. This is a very powerful application of this word. We begin to understand the magnitude of what Og was trying to tell us in this scroll when we understand the meaning of the word agape. I will greet this day with agape love, a heightened level of awareness. I will choose to see people the way God sees them. Heightened level of awareness, free of bias and prejudice, unconditional. For this, agape love is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. Then he goes on to say that muscle can split a shield and even destroy life. We can be forceful. But only the unseen power, that's a great word. David Hawkins wrote a book called Power Versus Force. He talks about words that are powerful. Only this power, this agape love, can open the hearts of men. Open their hearts. Until I master this art, I'm no more than a peddler in the marketplace. And he goes on to tell us that regardless of how we look, or how we sound, or the clothes that we wear, or the bargains that we offer, that we can melt all hearts. All hearts, like in the sun is raised, soften the coldest clay. And some of us have dealt with some cold hearts. Og did not give us a timeline. He did not say it'll happen the first time that you practice agape love. He's just saying in time we can melt all hearts like the sun is rays, soften the coldest clay. Then he asks a very interesting question. I've shared this with you a couple weeks ago because I felt it was important, and it's particularly apropos tonight with the topic of the art of connection. He says, and how will I do this? How will I do this? And then he goes on to tell us we will do it by, one, falling in love with the rain that occurs in our life and the darkness that occurs in our life and enduring the sadness in our life and embracing the challenges in our life. What has that got to do with anything? And as we study this, we discover that agape love has even a more powerful meaning, even a more heightened meaning. It basically says that when we handle our difficulties and we just take them on and we look for the good and what's positive, that not only do we learn lessons that help propel our life forward, our example, this is agape love, our example inspires others to be better people. I shared at that time the story of Susan Zumbrunnen. Susan called this afternoon. We'll be talking again tomorrow morning. She just had her first skin graft last Friday. Very, very painful. But she knows it's propelling her forward, and she's just doing everything in her power to lift and build. Her conversation was so positive again today. Her words, so kind and thoughtful, focused on what I was going through. She had heard that I had been sick, and she wanted to make sure I was getting sufficient rest. And I'm thinking, Susan, you can barely get through the day because of the pain. But thank you so very, very much. Not to be too personal, but my mother just had her first chemotherapy treatment, first of one every week for 3 months this last Monday. And I watched my own mother exercising this same level of agape love. Not a complaint, not a worry. She was so grateful they caught the cancer, no matter how serious it is at this time, because it helped her understand why she'd been feeling the way she was feeling, and hopefully now they can actually do something about it to prolong her life. These examples in our life are just amazing of how people exercise such a heightened level of awareness that they realize that their own example in handling their own challenges can inspire and lift people. That's quite phenomenal. Then we know that as we have these experiences, what I like to call our little mini Gethsemanes, these moments where we really get to feel pain, they prepare us. They prepare us to better understand others. Now, if we could see the end from the beginning, it would be much easier to practice agape love. Because there can be fear in the beginning that if I am to show up this way, well, what about me? I mean, how will people know what I'm going through? How will they know? How will they know? How will they know how much I've suffered? And how much I've struggled and the price that I've paid? And it's a great thing to discover as we're focusing on this principle of connection with others. That would be wonderful if people had the energy to care. But the truth is, they're expending all of their energy to deal with their own stuff. Just to look okay. And when we assign to another responsibility for our happiness, we're going to be sorely disappointed. Not because they don't want to serve. They don't have the reserves to give us all that we need. That is going to be our responsibility. So we can keep banging our heads against this empty cup, trying to be understood, or we can come over to the other side and understand others, and in understanding, experience a full cup. Tonight I want to share with you how to fill your cup, how to fill it to overflowing, so there's joy in your life. But I want to share that with as a precursor, because the truth of the matter is, you may hesitate to go down the very road that will provide you with the ability to fill your cup. Well, I want to walk you through that gently tonight, one step at a time, and share with you some principles. Some are known, some are little known, perhaps a little different take on some of them, because who among us could not use a full cup right now and overflowing? How many of us are feeling drained, worn out, exhausted, overwhelmed with all that's happening in our lives? Who couldn't use a little bit of an overflowing cup? Well, it's my mission tonight. Now that I know what direction we're going in, right, sweetheart? I want to fill your cup. You're also going to discover something from this conversation that I come emotionally and prayerfully prepared for a discussion, and there I am sharing with you and often learning with you at the same time. I have studied this material. I have put it into practice. I've written a book about it. And yet there are times in these moments when my desire is to find answers to your challenges and to be inspired to say those things that will lift your life, that there is no script for the night. What you experience is truly just a desire to serve. So if you can be in that same space with me, and just let me know where you are, so that we can show up for you as we go through this process, I'm going to show you how to fill your cup. That's what's come to me right now. That's where we're going to go. Now, in doing that, some of you have been through this material before, so you know. When I say we all have a wall of resistance, well, we do. I wrote this last week a very interesting approach to this topic. I'm going to paraphrase it for you. I'm not going to read from the book, but this new chapter. I said, I want everyone to imagine that they're living in a rock house. It's a very small house, with a rock house, high walls. The only way out of this house is a large oak door, and it's on iron hinges, big lock. every once in a while we open the door and we shout out what's going on in our world. I'm really tired. I didn't sleep very well last night. Gosh, that exam was really difficult. Oh, my goodness, my children kept me up all night. Every once in a while, we shout out one of those little things of what's going on behind our wall. Except for today. Let's all, for a moment, put on a jacket. Let's open our door. And let's step out on the porch and just look around. If you're in a committed companionship, you'll find another little rock wall right next to you. Right next to you. Rock wall. You look out on the landscape, and as far as the eye can see, there are these little fortresses, rock fortresses everywhere with big oak doors. Everywhere. Millions of them. Where are all the people? All the people are behind their rock wall. You've stepped out. You have just become a very rare person. Well, you're standing next to your companion's wall. And you see the door open. And she said, I've had an awful day. And before the door closes, you realize it is her. And you're outside your world. You want to know what it was like for her. And so you say something like, well, tell me more about that. And the door opens, and you're ushered into her world. They tell us that not only does everybody have a rock wall around them, a wall of resistance, it's been measured by Dr. Hartman, that on average, in a non-adversarial relationship, that's between two committed companions, that even in this relationship, a person is holding back 40%, on average, 40% of their cooperation and their productivity until they feel understood, validated, affirmed. So someone opens their door, shouts something out, we hear it. We hear that verbal hint about what might be going on in their world, and so we say, well, tell me more about that. The door opens and we get to step into their world. And we'll talk more about that as we proceed tonight and next week. But everybody's got a wall. And we wander around and we see a door open and someone says something. Door closes. We see another door open. Somebody says something. Nobody responds. Door closes. You notice why nobody's responding? Everybody's in their own little fortress. All they're doing is opening a door and saying something about what's going on in their world. Nobody responds. Door closes. It is interesting that if behind that world we have all kinds of habits of thinking, we talk about self-esteem. I'll mention it tonight. If we've got self-doubt and fear and anxiety, and we open the door and send out a message, and nobody responds, and we close the door, it affirms our worst fears. That must be how people really feel about us. Now you know. As my friend Harvey Schoaf used to say, don't tell me, or said you'd be less concerned. You'd be less concerned about what people think about you if you knew how little they actually do. They're all inside their own fortress, dealing with their own crap. The unusual one is the one who steps out of his own world and begins building bridges, approaching another person's fortress, and watches for a door. Door opens. Well, tell me more about that. Share with me what's happening. It doesn't take much for someone to say, well, come into my world. And we'll find in today's world that people are so hungry to have someone understand them, to affirm them. They feel so alone that we'll often hear, as we're practicing these principles that we'll be sharing tonight and next week, that we'll hear people say more often than ever before, you know, I've never told anybody this before, but... And they'll share something personal or private or painful, even to a stranger, anyone who cares enough to be safe, to create a safe place to actually practice agape love, to see the person behind the wall, to be interested, curious about what is happening in that wall. So tonight, let's all see the walls. Let's all, just for a few moments, step outside of ours. If there are people with you or people in your life, just imagine they all have a wall. Everyone has one. Can we watch for that door? Step into their world. Once we're in their world, we're going to want to listen very, very carefully. And as we're listening, we could have questions that could come to our heart. Where do they come from? Where do we find these questions? Do you want a script? Everybody wants a script. Give me a script, Dave. Tell me how to do this with a script. There's no script. There's a process. But there is no script. Here's the process. We pause for a few moments, and we get very clear about all the garbage that we're dragging around in our sack behind us. Get very clear. What's in there? What's in your sack? Has anybody ever hurt you? Have you ever hurt anyone? Ever had a financial setback or loss? Been fired from a job? Missed a promotion? Lost a relationship? Had someone important in your life die? What are you carrying around? What pain is in the sack that you are dragging? Almost everyone I've met is dragging around a sack. Even though I've been through this process, I occasionally find myself dragging something in my sack I had not yet identified. If you were to pause for a moment and turn around and empty your sack, what would you see? What would be there? I can think of many in my life. I talked to a wonderful person today who was talking about a challenge in a family member that I understood. I still remember being in college, having a broken hand. This one right here. Hand was broken. Cartilage in my knee and my right ankle were gone. The nerves in my right shin were smashed. Had a bulging disc in my back. I was not going to be playing college football much longer. Season was over, and it was a time of truth. I was losing body parts faster than we had numbers of weeks left in my career. If I stayed for another year, I wouldn't have made it. And there was a truth. That which I had invested my life in was not going to be my career. Now, there are a number of people that get to that moment, and they don't know what to do. They just don't know what to do. And they can flounder for a lifetime. Because that which they dreamed about is gone. For another, it might have been a dream home. Economy shifts, jobs are lost, money could be lost, investments go down, all of a sudden we can't pay for it, and we lose it. Could be a dream home. Could have been a dream job. Could have been a dream relationship where our companion was not faithful. Perhaps we weren't faithful. Broke it apart. All kinds of things could be in this sack. And in the past, we may have felt tremendous shame. Shame being different than guilt. Guilt, we feel bad about what we've done. Shame, we feel bad about who we are. We might feel some shame. We might have some fear about getting into another investment or another career or another relationship. It's got all this pain and pressure. And it's all about what we've experienced. It's all about what we're feeling. And then the magic moment occurs. I want everybody who's with us tonight, whether you're on the video or on the telephone, just reach down if you can. Now, if this is a difficult thing to do, you may need some assistance from a trained therapist, because some of these things can be really awful. Pick up when you can pick up. There might be one that you just can't right now. Pick it up. Just pick up one and look at it. Wow. And ask yourself this question. Is there anyone else suffering from a similar wound? Is there? Of course there is. What would happen if instead of dragging this around and feeling guilt and shame and fear, frustration, we took it and we just placed it right against our chest and we engraved it on our heart? And our heart, as Og says in scroll number 2, instead of being small and bitter, it grows so that it can warm the earth. That which has been a burden, which we've been dragging around behind us, now is going to become a resource through which and by which we can bless another person's life. It will be through these life experiences that our questions will come to our mind. Our experience, our empathy, our ability to put ourselves on somebody else's path. Now when we hear someone open a, we'll see someone open a door and we hear that verbal hint, well, share with me what you're thinking. We step inside and we start to listen. We're listening to really understand. We're not listening to jump in at the first opening, and as Jolene Wondergram, I said, Wonder Gem, thank you. Sorry, Jolene. Jolene said this beautiful comment. She said, I'm so excited. I'm listening to understand instead of waiting for an opening to pounce on them. How many times are we in conversations where we don't dare breathe because if we do, somebody will jump in? We're telling a story about our life, and we just get to the best part, and somebody wants to tell us their story when they went there. How often do we jump in when somebody else breathes, and we want to tell them our story when we were there? This principle of intrinsic validation requires that we become a listener. Easiest thing to do. You don't have to have any answers. You don't have to have any wisdom. The gift is that you're willing to listen. That's the gift. And so we step into someone's world. We're listening to understand. We want to be safe. So if you're writing notes on a piece of paper, draw a correlation between listening to understand means that we are safe. We're safe. Now, we demonstrate that we understand not by telling them our stories, but by asking them questions born of our own life experience. See, it's important that we understand where they are. It is more important that they know that we know where they are. Everybody got that distinction? Oh, I know where they are. So what? Do they know that you know? Do they know that you know? Because that's when you create a safe place. Distinction. I listen, understand, I'm safe. When they know that I know where they are, I've created a safe place. Two very different portions of this conversation. And when I'm safe, and I've created a safe place, guess what happens to those walls? Yes. They come down. There's no need for them anymore. Those walls are built, as Og says, out of hate and suspicion, skepticism, judgment, doubt. All of a sudden, I'm safe, and I've created a safe place. Has everybody got that distinction? I've made this really clear in the new chapter in the book. I just really felt strongly about this one morning when I was writing to make sure this is understood. I'm listening to understand. That makes me safe. When they know that I know where they are, I've created a safe place. That's our objective. That isn't done with a script. That's done with our own life experience. What is your intuition? What is your gut telling you? wonder if, and I've shared one of the most profound stories that occurred to me in this area, listening to a person tell a story of tremendous woe, when at the end I simply said, how seriously are you considering suicide? Where does that question come from? In that dark hour 20 years ago when I was there, that was on my mind. I wondered, is that what he's going through? Born out of my experience. Nobody could have scripted that. And very few who had not been in that deep of a dark night would have even known to ask, let alone have the courage to do it. We'll be put in positions with people where we can uniquely serve them. We'll be talking about this the next couple of weeks. If there's anyone I can serve, I can serve. With my life experience, put them on my path and I will serve them. I'll show up. I'll listen. And then we go, wow, they're having one of these experiences. I know what that feels like. Are you losing any sleep? What impact is this having on your relationships? Courageously asking, and from a place that no one's ever going to be offended, because we've listened. And the question simply validates that we know where they are. I go, wow, finally somebody understands where I am. Wow. It is that simple. Now, there's a few landmines we can step our feet into. No question about it. I'll walk through a couple of those with you. But let us understand, we are in a rock wall ourselves, oak door. We can't connect with people from in here because we just open the door and shout what's going on in our world. Nobody's listening because they're all in their world. The greatest secret of success in all ventures is I care enough about others to open my door and step out of my own world and stand by someone's door and watch for it to open. And when I hear it, I step in. Tell me more about that. Share with me what you're thinking. And when I'm there, I listen. And when someone finishes a sentence, I count 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000. Why? Because it's almost like someone's mind is going, okay, can I say the rest of it? It looks like, sounds like, they actually want to know. Okay. You watch someone's brain shift. I learned this great secret. I had the privilege for 10 years of specializing in direct response television commercials. That was my number one thing. Sitting here looking at some silver and gold tellies and crystal communicator awards and et cetera on the shelf. Isn't that great? The secret to that success was this principle. When you're interviewing someone for a testimonial, you can tell, I should say, when you're listening to a testimonial, you can tell. I can tell. Everybody can tell whether it's fake. Don't those drive you crazy? I just had such a wonderful time. And you go, oh, come on. It wouldn't have taken that much more to find someone who really liked this product. It can come from their heart, not from a script. I've watched directors do this and go, just say this. No. Just say it this way. Well, all we did was have the person sit down. They're in front of lights and cameras, makeup artists, producers, camera operators, sound men. Oh, it's scary. And most of them spent last night rehearsing a line they were going to deliver. No matter what you ask, they're going to deliver their memorized line, and so they do. And when they're done, we just lean in. Anything else you'd like to share? I'm listening. Now, sometimes it takes a few questions, but all of a sudden we see someone shift from their left brain to their right, from their head to their heart, and out came how they really felt about their experience. And sometimes just raw and real, and those are the clips that we always used. Powerful, powerful material, because we cared enough to listen. We really really were interested in their experience, not as some canned line for a TV commercial. We wanted the real deal. That's why those commercials were so successful. Not because I was a great director, simply because I cared enough to listen and be safe and create a safe place for them to be able to be true and honest about their own experience. Unrehearsed, spontaneous. And those kinds of testimonials resonate with people's hearts. They will buy your product. Because it's real. Well, that's where I learned the principle. It's so interesting to watch those who are just learning this. Be patient with yourself. It might take a little while. If you've been one who just loves to talk and share, and it's going to be hard to just be a listener. However, if you're shy, you'll have the easiest time because you weren't talking before. Now, instead of focusing on what they're thinking about me, you get to focus on what are they saying about themselves. And we get to listen for those verbal hints, those open doors, and we get to step into their world and serve them. Now, sometimes we'll stand in front of somebody's door and it doesn't open. That's why the two first principles of intrinsic validation are about noticing. I've been talking to you about caring about someone. The first two principles are really about noticing someone. Noticing what's important to them. So we're standing in front of their wall. Everybody's wall is a little different. Everybody's circumstances are a little different. Can we notice what's important to them? And when we see it, can we verbalize it? Often, just noticing and verbalizing creates that open door and a verbal hint. And we're in their world having a conversation. It's not manipulative. You can't manipulate agape love. You can't fake it. But you can be aware and care enough to verbalize what you see. Now, we can't let the evening go by without talking for a moment about mirror neurons. Isn't it exciting to know that instead of me teaching you clever sales techniques and how to manipulate someone and how to coerce them into buying your product and closing the sale and all those icky things that most of us won't do or can't be replicated, my message to you is really simple. How about if you notice somebody and you verbalize it? Well, what's that got to do with anything? What causes the door to open? Well, I step into their world and I listen. What's that got to do with anything? You become safe. Well, they understand that I understand where I am. What's that got to do with anything? Well, now we create a safe place. And the walls come down. And you get to learn many things about this human being. Their hopes, their dreams, their pain, their struggle. Now what do you do? Sometimes that's just enough. Thank you for sharing. But if you happen to represent a product or a service, there's a very good chance in this process that you might discover that they could really be served by it. Have you noticed we haven't said anything about a product or service yet? The reason being is when we stepped out of our world, either right there or standing in front of somebody else's world, before we step in, we take this suitcase. I'm holding up my left hand for those of you on the phone, the suitcase of personal baggage that need to be right and fixed and justify and defend. In my right hand, the suitcase of agenda. And I leave them outside. I walk in totally encumbered, totally. This isn't about selling them a car or signing them up for a network marketing company. It's not about any of that. It's about being safe and creating a safe place. that's the agenda, if there is one. My agenda is to actually care about the person. Walls come down. Now there's no need for walls. Second of all, I know everything I need to know to determine whether what I have would even serve them. And then we get to go to the next level. We get to go to a point where we try on their dreams. What does it mean to try on their dreams? It means to say, okay, would I do what I'm about to say myself? If I feel in my business that I'm selling a dream and living a nightmare, I got a problem. Because I've created a safe place. This is integrity in place. There's trust in place. This could be important that I take a hard look at what I'm doing, the self-improvement that I'm experiencing, the blessings that I'm receiving, because sometimes we only measure those in terms of dollars, and that's not the only benefit that can be coming to us when we're initially getting into a new business. But we do not want to be selling a dream and living a nightmare, because we're being duplicitous, double-minded. We're not being integrous. Because this is really, there are two times when mirror neurons play in a conversation dramatically. This is one, and the other one is when you first show up. Now, I'm going to spend 5 minutes or so and describe to you what the law of attraction is really all about. It's not that complicated. A lot of people want to put a quantum physics spin on it of some kind. It's very physiological. Very real. We are built, created, I'd like to think, to have this phenomenon occur, and either attracts us to people, repels us to people, or from people. It's very simple. We have at the top of our brain stem a little almond-shaped place called the amygdala. It's our fight-or-flight center. And it has an overabundance of a neuron called a mirror neuron, like mirror, mirror on the wall. These neurons are very unique. First of all, they fire at twice the speed of a normal neuron. So before a person even has a conscious thought, their mirror neurons have fired. Second of all, they pick up things that are not processed. They are processed, and things in addition to those things that are processed through your optic center, through your thalamus, the visuals that you see. They pick up so much more than that. It's almost a part of our intuitive ability. We can feel something, we just don't see it. Well, if we saw what they're seeing, we could see it, but we're not seeing it, we're just feeling it. Because when it picks up one of these things, a mirror neuron, fires twice the speed of thought, when it fires, it sends a message to our brain. Sympathetic nervous system releases a molecule of emotion. That's what Candace Pert called them, and the molecules of emotion. They go into our body, and at a cellular level, we feel. We feel something, and we feel before we have a thought. This is powerful. So we show up. We show up. And we're doing the fake it till you make it routine. Anybody heard about that one? Now, we may do a really good job to the person's eyes, but we're not going to fake out their mirror neurons. Because we have 200 muscles on our face. 2 to the power of 200 minus 1 is billions of facial expressions, possibilities. And a mirror neuron can read every one of them. Facial expressions, posture, tone of our voice, timbre in our voice. Our duplicitous thoughts, our double-minded thoughts. I'm trying to act like I care, but really all I want you to do is buy my product so I can get that tropical island, get enough money to finally tell the world to go to heck because I'm sick and tired of people. So I'm smiling and acting kind, where deep inside I'm just loathing having to have this experience in the first place. Well, the loathing leaks out on our face. Dan Goldman wrote some beautiful material about this in Social Intelligence. It leaks out on our face. You can't stop it. You may deceive the person's eyes, but you will not deceive their mirror neurons. They will feel uncomfortable and not even know why. They'll have to override their discomfort to work with you. Why create that? What would happen if we did as Og says in Scroll 2, and silently and to myself I say, I love you? Though spoken in silence. And then he goes down a list of things it'll do, from unwrinkle my brow, bring a shine in my eyes, echo in my voice. And who is there who will not buy my goods when they feel my love? Those are powerful words for 1967, because neuroscience was embryonic. They didn't even know this stuff back then. But Og described it so beautifully and so poetically that when we show up and we say silently and to ourselves, I love you, it shifts our whole demeanor. It brings all of these elements in our demeanor, our look, the timbre of our voice, our posture, in alignment with that thought. And a person's mirror neuron says, this person's safe. This person's safe. That occurs before we ever open our mouth. When we show up less than integrous, then you'll be offended by that. You know, sometimes we have conflicting thought processes, and sometimes it's best just to be honest about them. But that is a powerful moment in the law of attraction, because when someone's mirror neurons say safe, they are drawn in. They are attracted. When someone's mirror neurons say, not safe, not safe, there's a little hesitancy. The walls remain up. Oh, I'm smiling. I'm acting like I'm listening. But I've added extra defenses just because of the way in which I'm feeling. Why would we want to create that? So that's the first place mirror neurons are going to show up. Now, if we're showing up this way and we're finding something good, discovering what's important to them, we're verbalizing it, a door opens, we hear a verbal hint, we step into their world, we listen, we are safe at another level of safety. And when they know that we know where they are, we create a safe place, and down come the walls. Here's the next place that a mirror neuron is going to show up. And it's when we feel compelled, and sometimes appropriately, many times appropriately, to share an idea. To share an idea. A product, a service. This is when our thought processes can destroy our safe place. We're going to want to make sure in this process that what we share is something we would do. That we are convicted into the fibers of our being. Just like in the beginning we said, I love you. At this point, we want to be able to say, if this were me, this is what I would do. Saying that to yourself, I would do this. Exactly what I'm about to share. If we can say that, it will shine in our eyes, echo in our voice, unwrinkle our brow, bring a smile to our lips. And who is it that won't listen to our advice or counsel or ideas when they feel our love, our agape love, this heightened level of awareness about this person? It's a powerful moment. Does everybody have that? Mirror neurons show up when we first show up. Now, for practicing intrinsic validation, they're going to show up again because we haven't had an agenda. When there's no agenda present, mirror neurons seldom show up. Everybody have that? Would you write that down, sweetheart? When there is no agenda present, mirror neurons really rarely show up, because they show up when there's a conflict between what we're saying and what we're thinking. When there's no agenda, we're totally at ease. Or can be totally at ease. And then we get to that moment where we're going to now want to share. And boy, what's going to happen? Well, now we're determined. Yes, if this were me, this is what I would do. We now believe that in our soul, and our mirror neurons are supporting it. Is this the right time? Is this the right time to share? Could be. If it is, then we want to gain agreement. Gain agreement back to our rock wall looks like this. It's like taking your arm and putting it on the shoulder of the person and saying, would you be willing to come over into my world and let me share with you an idea or two that I think would serve you? That's the feeling we want to leave. Whatever you say, there's no script for it. Someone says, yeah, I'll listen. Okay? So we step out, and on the way into our world, we pick up the suitcase, not the baggage one. That one stays out. We pick up the agenda. And when we have them sit down, we open up our suitcase, we look at everything that's in there, and we only take out what will serve them based on what we have discovered. We don't tell them all of our stories. I know some people said, I want to buy. No, you can't buy yet. I've got 15 more minutes to tell you. We just want to share it with them enough for them to understand the value of what you're offering and how it can serve them. There'll be lots of time in the future. Now, I'm going to go through this process because some people will say no at that point. We don't want to violate that space. We've created a safe space. You don't want to violate it by proceeding anyway. Say, look, I've invested 32 and a half minutes with you. It's my turn to speak, so shut up and listen. We just can't play that. We'll step back in their world and say, well, share with me what you're thinking. This may not be the time for them, no matter what your product or service is. And there will be a time, could be a time. What there always will be is another time when you can step into their world if you are safe and if you create a safe place. You can always step back in. Now, we're there. We hear an objection. An objection is just another verbal hint. We just found another door inside their world that opened up and we heard a verbal hint. What are we going to do? Grab them by the nape of the neck, yank them outside and beat them up or something? No. We're going to take them back into their world and step into that door and find out what it is. See, an objection, it's a very interesting psychology. Because we feel often we've earned the right to speak, an objection's a barrier. Let's look at an objection as an opportunity. An opportunity to better understand where this person is, to be safe and create an even safer place. Because we haven't gotten to the point of consummating this relationship. And we never will, should we avoid these opportunities. You see, objections are not questions that need an answer to an objection. Objections are statements that demand a question. Oh, I just can't do something like that. Oh, yes, you can. Da, 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 da. We're starting to answer their statement. You don't answer statements. Statements should cause a curiosity. Well, share with me more about your experience. What happened? What happened after that? Oh, do you ever felt this way from your own life experience? And down come the walls around the objections. And people answer their own objections because we cared enough to listen and understand. And when the time comes for what is the traditional close in a sale, I would like us to throw that concept out. I find it offensive personally. It's basically saying, I buy, take your money, and goodbye. It's a transaction. There are very few things, except for maybe at a grocery store, and even their customer service is so valuable. There are very few sales made outside of a retail environment, and sometimes in a retail environment that aren't relationship related. We're not closing, we're beginning. We're beginning. We've just spent the time stepping into this rock wall, being safe, creating a safe place, listening, understanding. Walls have come down. We know what to share. We've shared it. We have addressed those concerns they have by stepping back into their world and asking questions. And we've reached that moment in time when the question really is, are you ready to begin? Are you ready to get started? Which basically says, we've just been deciding whether we really want to work together. I would love to work with you. Would you like to work with me? Then let's go to work together. That's a relationship sale. That can be done. Ramon and I recently bought a car. It was a relationship sale, wasn't it, sweetheart? Totally relationship sale. What a magnificent human being who handled that transaction, an old friend. I could tell you the dealership and I could put an advertisement in for him, but I won't. Point being that we enjoy going to, buying things, beginning relationships with people who treat us like this. If we go and there's some gimmick to get our name and our phone number and some gimmick to go from salesperson to manager to, it's like they've got a wall with ever-increasing larger sized sledgehammers. Okay, sledgehammer one, go take them on booth number one. Okay, sledgehammer two, come in there in booth number one. Okay, sledgehammer three, until they finally beat the crap out of us. We sigh, that's not any fun. Whether it's buying a car or beginning a relationship in a network marketing company. Let us begin. Are you ready to get started? Well, this is intrinsic validation. Don't get caught up in all of the minutia right now, because it really boils down to just a couple of moments. And the first moment is, am I willing to give up my victimhood, having people feel sorry for me and worry about me and think about me, and ask, is there anyone who suffered a similar wound? And shift from wanting people to focus on my wounds to using those wounds to help us better focus on another. When we do, and those walls come down, what we know is that behind those walls is a huge reserve, a reservoir even, of cooperation and productivity. And it will flood out and it will fill your cup. And it is a glorious, glorious experience. So, this week, focus on looking for what's important to others and verbalizing it. Stand by people's fortresses and watch for a door to open and listen for a verbal hint. When you hear one, step in. Well, tell me more about that. Then practice listening. You don't need to fix it or give advice. You just get to listen. When you think you're beginning to understand, ask empathetic questions to validate your understanding. In doing so, they'll know that you know where they are, and you'll create a safe place. Start here. Creating safe places, connection with people, and then move from that to sharing your ideas by trying them on yourself, making sure it's the right time, gaining agreement, and then sharing. And when objections come up, don't answer them. They're statements that just demand a question. Oh, share with me what you're thinking. What's your experience? And see what happens in your relationship, starting with those closest to us, those who should get the very best from us. Well, thanks everyone for being here tonight. I do hope that what I've shared will bless your life. And moreover, that using these principles, you'll bless another. For it's in that blessing that you'll have a feeling come over you that heals self-esteem. There can finally be purpose in your past suffering. It's no longer being drugged, it's now in our hearts. There's finally joy in our journey because it comes flooding out over us. And that feeling creates much needed healing in our self-esteem. Well, that's how we fill our cup. That's how we fill our cup. May you trust the process. The greatest secret of success in all ventures. Og said at the end of the scroll, though I have all the skills and knowledge of the world, without this, without agape love, I will fail. I can succeed with this alone. With this alone. Well, have a great night, everybody, and thanks for being with us. We'll look forward to you being back with us next Tuesday night for a celebration of life. And next week, we're going to take on mental creation. Mental creation. How do we use this very vivid visualization of ours to manifest ideas and impressions and solutions to problems, to ignite part of our brain, ignite our passion, passion that will cause us to do whatever is necessary to create intangible reality, that which we've seen so clearly in our mind, so that we can do the work of creation, passion, mission, vision-driven. We'll discover the next few weeks. We don't get to skip the work of creation. No one does. There's no shortcut. But when we do it vision-driven, mission-driven, passion-driven, we do it without counting the cost or tracking the time. It's thrilling. It's joyful. When we do it because we have to, and we should, and we must, it becomes boring, mundane, repetitious, burdensome. Since we'll all have to do the work of creation, make sure you're here next week and the week after as we talk about how to use your very vivid imagination, your vivid visualization, to ignite the very passion to drive that action. Thanks, everybody.